This is a reopening of the hearing on traffic issues only for the conditional use permit for the Living Hope Community Baptist Church, permit number 1602-134. Let's see. Should we start? This is not your typical sort of procedure, but we'll probably just follow kind of the standard approach on this hearing from staff, the applicant, and then we'll open this up for public comment. Any objections to that approach or any other suggestions on a different way? Is just because it's an unusual proceeding? Okay, I think that's how we'll go about it. I think it looks like Ms. Sands probably your first up then.
Are you okay with me right here?
You can sit wherever you like, as long as we can, if you've got a microphone over there.
Excellent. I'm going to stay here today.
Okay.
So we did have an interesting discussion with the city. I'm going to generally defer to our transportation experts to cover issues with regard to your questions. But I would like to make clear that we have come, I think, a decision with regard to adding a condition to the project. And so I can read that real quickly, and then we can print that up for you,
okay.
However you prefer to receive it. But a new traffic impact analysis, TIA, shall be submitted for phases 3 and 4 at the time of site development activity application, permit application or building permit application for phase 3. If the TIA triggers a SEPA threshold requirement or creates an adverse impact, a revised SEPA review shall be conducted. So I can give you that in
language. Okay.
Exactly. So I guess the question would be is, do you want to hear from our traffic people with regard to a response to your questions that you had?
Why don't we open this up for, unless the staff, unless the applicant wanted to provide anything at this point, we could open this up for comment from the public right now. Kind of would like to hear from everyone to see where this is first.
There's no general members of the public. We did receive, there was woman
one
here.
Got one comment. We are adding that to the record, so that'll just, the number it'll get is just the next number in line.
Okay.
So there was that one comment. I think the, is there anyone else from the public here other than the city? Nope. Okay, let the record reflect there's not. And did the city wish to provide provide some testimony?
Yes.
Okay, yeah, go ahead and step forward then.
Podium here?
Yeah, that would be great.
All right. Is it okay if I close this to put
my... And your name for the record?
Yeah, Nick Bond with the City of Port Orchard. I'm the Development Director for the Department of Planning, Department of Community Development.
And you're here to tell the truth today?
Yes.
And we did, your comment was received yesterday. That's been added to the record, the city's comment.
Okay. So, first of all, I wanted to thank you for reopening the hearing and giving us an additional opportunity to testify. Obviously, we learned about the project very close to the original hearing date, and we're scrambling to assemble our comments, so thank you for that. The oral testimony that I'd like to give is going to be structured a little bit different than what is in my written comments. The written comments really addressed the previously provided comments or responses from the county, the applicant, and the applicant's transportation engineer, as well as the questions that you had provided. I think there's a better way to present this information, and so that's what I'm going to attempt to do here. I've broken down our issues really into five pieces. The first of these five pieces is related to the project scope. The city's position is that the city and the county are not able to accurately evaluate project impacts in the absence of a clear understanding of the use that is proposed. We've observed that there's an inconsistency in the project description between the original notice of application and combined SEPA notice, the supplemental notice of application and SEPA notices. Those both indicated a 21,600 square foot church facility. Then the staff report indicates that this is a 38,000 square foot church facility. And then the TIA description that is included in the traffic report talks about phase one being 3,000 square feet and phase two being 6,000 to 7,000 square feet and doesn't address the gross square footage of the project And it states explicitly that it only evaluated the impacts of phases one and two of the project, not of the four phases that were described in the staff report or in the SEPA decision. Furthermore, the city is concerned that the project as described in these documents describes the structures to be constructed, not the details of the proposed uses. And for instance, in the project narrative provided by the applicant's engineer, Fred Cagle, he talks about classrooms, offices, and a gym, as well as the soccer field use, which has been clarified to be 1 week per summer. When we as a city reviewed the ITE manual, which the county's concurrency ordinance currently refers to the fifth edition of that manual, which is quite old, I think it's 20 or 25 years old, in our meeting just now, the county indicated that they use the 10th edition, and so there's a little bit of inconsistency between practice and what is in the code. Obviously, we agree that the 10th edition is probably a more accurate, or the 9th edition, I think, was actually used for this project, is a more accurate document. In any event, we're concerned that the traffic report didn't quantify sort of the performance standards or the performance measures or the intensity of the use that is proposed. It didn't explore what sorts of peripheral church activities would take place. For instance, is the church going to host preschool? Is the church going to host Alcoholics Anonymous meetings? And we feel that this sort of information about the use of this classroom space and the staffing of these offices would be helpful to establish a baseline for what is actually being approved in this permit. In our meeting just now, the county staff expressed to me that there's a condition in the conditional use permit that basically limits the uses to that which is described in the application materials. I think the city's position on that is that the decision from the hearing examiner should clearly establish what is and what is not approved in terms of a baseline. And our part of the reason for this is that the county's conditional use permit chapter for hearing examiner conditional use permits talks about minor and major revisions. And it talks about the a major revision might be required if the use is expanded onto land area outside of the current scope of the project. It may be required if the building footprint is enlarged. It may also be required if the intensity of the use is increased, and it talks about over the minimum performance standards that are part of that initial approval. So we have difficulty evaluating the traffic impacts because we feel that the project hasn't been clearly described throughout all documents and specifically in the traffic impact analysis. And so some of the responses to the city's previous comments talked about the nexus between city intersections and this project, and we feel that it's not possible to even determine whether a nexus does or does not exist in the absence of a traffic report that accurately captures trip generation. Now, in our meeting just now, in talking to the applicant, they talked about what their staffing levels are for the peak PM hour, which is what we're most concerned about, because that is the hour where background traffic on the street network in and around Port Orchard and the UGA, the urban growth area, is at its worst. And so we feel that the impacts of this church shouldn't be evaluated on Sunday because there isn't a lot of traffic on the adjacent streets on Sunday. There is a lot of traffic and congestion on the peak PM hour of 4 to 6 PM on a weeknight. So it's really hard to evaluate those impacts, but I feel comfortable, provided that this information gets entered into the record and is somehow recognized in a hearing examiner decision, that the trip generation numbers provided by the applicant's engineer, they're indicating 4 peak PM trips, which in looking at the fifth edition of the ITE manual, which I provided, suggests that a church of 38,000 square feet would have between 16,000 or 16 and 153 peak PM trips. So they're at one quarter of what an older edition of the manual states would be typically generated by a facility of this sort, but they've indicated that they have some part-time staff, a pastor, and that those would typically be the only people at the church facility during that peak PM hour. However, there's always the ability for a congregation to grow, for the uses of this facility to enlarge, and you know, maybe the church sometime down the road wants to start a food bank, and that food bank starts generating traffic at certain hours. If we approve a conditional use permit under the assumption that there are four p.m. peak trips, and suddenly it creeps upward, we see that as a problem, and so we think it's important to document in the decision sort of what that performance standard would be. The other concerns that we have, one of them is related to the proposed driveway configuration, and we don't think that this is an insurmountable challenge. We just have concerns with the current configuration of the driveway as it relates to safety. We've reached out to WashDOT and are having ongoing conversations about this, but it seems that they seem willing to work with the city and the county to address both of our concerns, but they're pretty noncommittal. Their official comment into the record was that an access permit would be required for this project. I think it's important to note that SR-160 is a Class 3 highway under the WashDOT Highway Access Management Guidebook for the Olympic region, and that's a 2002 publication, and that Class 3 highways require private driveways to be separated by a minimum of 330 feet. And when we look at the driveway configuration that is proposed here, we see it called a shared driveway, and certainly the existing driveway is being widened greatly, but what we see really are two parallel driveways that are not separated from one another at all. And there's not any control for vehicles using one driveway versus the other at the point where they would have to cross over, making sort of an X pattern to get into the correct lane for turning onto Sedgwick. And so our concern is that in the absence of some sort of traffic control to make sure that vehicles are not queuing up and backing onto SR-160, that this will be a problem. We were also concerned with the width of the proposed access as being challenging should the corridor be fully pedestrianized in the future. This creates a very wide gap from sidewalk to sidewalk where somebody would be crossing the street. And so perhaps there's the ability to move the driveway, either have the church driveway be the primary driveway with an access then onto the private road once you've exited the highway, but to keep that driveway as narrow as possible. Additionally, I think it needs to be noted that WashDOT has only said that a permit is required. They haven't approved a permit, and so there is the possibility that if WashDOT says that this configuration doesn't meet their standard, that a revision to the CUP could be required as a result of that WashDOT direction. So that hasn't been given at this time. So as far as specific intersections to our specific impacts to intersections and road segments, we've provided our written comments, and we expanded upon the matrix that you had provided in your questions. And we really feel that, you know, we've identified the areas where we have concerns and specifically for projects that we are planning for, but that we don't yet have funding for. But we also felt that until we lock down the trip generation and the distribution of those trips through a more accurate traffic impact analysis, it is really hard for us to determine if a nexus exists between our facilities and the church. And our position is that it's, you know, ultimately it's the applicant's burden to demonstrate that they meet the criteria for granting a conditional use permit. And, you know, in the absence of something being added to the record or clarification being provided in the decision, we feel uncomfortable proceeding without knowing that this project is capped somehow at the level of trip generation that is being suggested by the applicant's engineer and the applicant. So in conclusion, the city does not oppose the siting of a church at this location. The city's opposition is to any development at this location or anywhere else surrounding Port Orchard that is not consistent with applicable codes or does not include mitigation of transportation impacts, especially if the proposed configuration will result in an unsafe condition. A lot of the facilities that the city is concerned with are actually in the county, but are facilities that we've identified in our 20-year forecasting as projected to fail within 20 years or potentially failing today, and some of those are also washed-out facilities. But our, you know, we're concerned if those projects were actually in the county's plans, or if they had listed them in their 6-year plan or their 20-year comprehensive plan as being needed to support this growth, we'd feel more comfortable that that these things are going to be dealt with by the county in the future. And because most of them are not in the county's plan, we're just concerned that if they go unmitigated now, and if the scope of the church's use creeps and the traffic increases over time, this thing could fail not as a result of a development, a future development on some other site in the vicinity, but it could fail because the existing uses continue to grow and creep, and it would circumvent state law in terms of requiring that jurisdictions have an ordinance that results in the denial of a development permit if that project causes a level of service failure. And so we feel it's important to establish that baseline in the decision so that we know when this use is expanded versus when a project is caused or when a failure is caused by another project. So I mentioned that we're concerned that this traffic impact analysis looked at phases 1 and 2 of the project. Our big concern is that the CUP appears to be for a 4-phase project, and it appears that SEPA was issued for a 4-phase project. And so the TIA only looked at some of those impacts. Notice was given to WSDOT and to other interested parties that not only understated the square footage of the facility in the notice of application, but the TIA also had a different number listed as well. And so we're not sure that WSDOT or other interested parties would have known the potential impact of this project and what is actually being proposed here today. The other concern here is that the county has stated that they are precluded through their concurrency ordinance from imposing conditions on a project related to a city, a facility in the city that fails. And so there are essentially 3 tools for mitigating traffic impacts. There's conditions that can be placed on a conditional use permit, there's SEPA conditions that can be placed on an MDNS, and there are denial of a project under a concurrency standard where the applicant either proposes mitigation or they don't get a project approval. So by having issued SEPA without notifying the city, we feel that we've lost one of the major tools, and in fact the tool that the county has previously stated to us is their primary means of mitigating traffic impacts. That has been issued for 4 phases of the project, and so the traffic report for the concurrency review only looks at phases 1 and 2. We're not sure how traffic impacts of phases 3 or 4 are going to be looked at, and if impacts are identified, how the county is legally going to impose those impacts, because an agreement isn't in place between the city and the county. So I think the county has drafted a condition that we generally support. However,
this is the one that Ms. Hans had just read.
Correct. However, our concern is that it doesn't clearly state that a new SEPA threshold decision will be issued. It says that if the impacts as shown in a traffic report suggest that a threshold has been tripped, I don't remember the exact wording, then SEPA may be done. And so our concern is that the county may make a decision as to whether to accept a traffic report or not accept a traffic report without consulting with the city so that the city can have its impacts evaluated. I think our preference on that condition would be to require that SEPA be reissued for phases 3 and 4, and potentially that the conditional use permit only be an approval for phases 1 and 2, because those are the only impacts that were evaluated in the TIA. I think that there's
I had a quick thought. You know, on SEPA, you can always issue an addendum, of course, and then an MDNS can be amended. It's not usually done that way, but you can amend an MDNS to address a particular issue, even to add a condition. So there's mm-hmm. a little bit of flexibility on there in terms of, I mean, there's a wide variety of ways of addressing SEPA, but.
Yeah, and I guess our concern was I wasn't totally clear that you could amend a DNS to be an MDNS, because a DNS is what was issued for this project previously. And so
I think you, I mean, an MDNS is kind of a DNS. It's just a DNS with conditions. So I would think you could if, but you'd want to, you know, have discussion with relevant parties before, you know.
In any event, I would trust your legal expertise to figure out a way to assure the city that it's going to be consulted in that supplemental traffic review process and SEPA process.
And that could just be, I mean, language on the consultation piece certainly can be added to a CUP. I mean, that would be one way to.
Yeah, and I guess the, you know, obviously the issuance of a SEPA decision is an appealable decision. I would want to make sure that whatever is provided is an appealable decision of the county, so that if the city disagrees with it, it has due process.
Yeah, an addendum wouldn't be, I think if you amended an MDNS, I think there's a, probably would be an appealable decision, but depending on how it was. And obviously, I don't make the SEPA, SEPA calls, it's the planning department decides how to approach SEPA.
But. So, you know, our general concern has to do with the criteria under the conditional use permit chapter about the proposed use being materially detrimental to other uses in the vicinity. And I guess we are concerned that it may be, depending on traffic impacts. We're not comfortable with the TIA that was provided, but provided traffic is capped as part of the decision based on the assumptions that are in that report, I think we might be all right. We may be all right with that type of decision, provided that we don't end up with the 153 peak PM trips that the fifth edition of the ITE manual indicates is within the range of possibility. So I think that can be addressed in the decision here. I think our other concern with, you know, talking about uses in the vicinity or the immediate vicinity, I think is the terminology in the conditional use permit chapter. For instance, we just received a notice of application this morning for 250 apartments at the intersection of Phillips and Sedgwick. And our concern would be that if, you know, if this project isn't clearly defined in terms of what is and what isn't allowed, that project may end up on the hook for mitigating impacts that were actually caused by this project. And so it's important to kind of draw a line so that that project, so that that and other future projects could be fairly evaluated. So with that said, I think I've covered everything that I want to say. You know, I would just, I would encourage a closer look at the definition of major revision under the conditional use permit chapter, because the county at some point is going to have to determine if and when a major decision has occurred. And there's a number of criteria that are listed there that I think it would be hard to definitively tell whether or not a major revision is required at some future date based on what's in the staff report today. And so I think we should make that easier, not harder, on some future staffer who's going to be looking at this, whether it's code enforcement or a city planner. And it may even be the city of Port Orchard if we annex this project, because ultimately we're going to have to live with this conditional use permit and be bound by it moving forward. So if there's any questions, I'm happy to take those, but thank you.
Yeah, thank you. Did the city or applicant want to follow up?
Do you need me to swear in again?
Let's go ahead and you were sworn in this morning, but your name for the record.
Joseph Parkinson.
And you swear to tell the truth today.
Yes, I do.
Thank you.
I think that with all the language that's being communicated is that the TIA trip reports are accurate. We discussed that in the meeting between the county and the city. And our situation is such is that the church does not generate any traffic between the 4 to 6 criteria that they're looking for, because it would basically be only staff that remained at the office until that point. The majority of our traffic would be, you know, possibly in the morning or some stuff in the evening. But, you know, there's the four trips, I think, that was mentioned is very conservative based on the first two phases. It's we have one full-time pastor and then the rest of the staff are volunteers or secretaries that come in for an hour or so and leave, and that's all happening during the day.
And so the staff, so it sounds like they're all part-time or volunteers.
That's correct.
And they usually come more during the day rather than during the peak PM.
That's correct.
Okay. And the city had some comments about clarification on kind of the uses and so forth. And obviously, you can't predict everything that's right. going to happen because things, that's just how the world works. But do you have some clarification on the kind of the uses to address some of the city's comments on?
Yeah, I think that, first of all, I think that calling the field a soccer field is a misdesignation because it's a play field.
And it's just that 1 week, right?
I think it's 1 week a year that we run a soccer camp for the South Kitsap community. And that's the only time that that's foreseen to be really used.
Mm-hmm.
As far as doing a food bank or a school or anything like that, from what my understanding is, that's outside the scope of what the conditional use permit is asking for.
Okay, so there's not a school or not proposed,
there's no
at least with this.
There's no intention for mm-hmm. that, right?
So there might be meetings and that sort of thing, but not kind of a formal where you'd have added trips during.
Right. So say like for instance that we had a leadership team meeting, mm-hmm. it would start at 7 and be done by 9.
Okay. So those types of things would be after people's standard work hours.
Exactly.
Except for more in the
evening. So our use of the facility is definitely that way, and so. The classrooms and the offices would all be used for just Sunday, primarily Sunday church things. That's the predominant use.
So the classrooms are predominantly for Sunday
school, what we call Sunday school. Mm-hmm. Yes, those activities.
Okay. And then in terms, there was a question about square footage and so forth. Maybe this is more for the planning department in terms of making sure I've got it real clear. And it should be what I think is outlined probably in the staff report.
Correct.
And I've got, okay, and then phase one, phase two, phase three, phase four. In terms of exactly what's being proposed, or though this is, you may not have had a chance to relook at this to make sure, but is it? I do want to confirm that this is the accurate kind of description of how the phasing and as it's proposed is what I've got is in the staff report. It's exhibit 29. I might give you a chance to take it to read through it just to make sure it's.
Okay, I would, though. I've read through the staff,
yeah.
the original staff report probably
yeah.
three times
okay.
prior to this, the original hearing, and it's accurate. I didn't notice anything in there that would be inaccurate in the descriptions that are presented.
Okay.
I could look at it again, though, while we're going on.
Have
something I could come up later if that, you know.
Okay. I just wanted to make sure each one was
yes.
just given the city's comment, so make sure the.
Yes.
All right, anything else?
No, and I think, you know, the one other concern, too, is I think that there's some language that's used that's saying that our project shouldn't be approved because of potential future projects that are in the queue later on, such as an apartment complex. And that, I don't know to me that just seems out of order because we've been working on this project we've been working on it for 2 years. It's been part of the working with the county for over a year now, getting close to a year and 4 months or year and a half on that. So I guess I don't understand how those future projects, you know, we're causing them to fail because we're doing everything we're asked to do.
It's sort of a cumulative analysis, I think, was what
okay.
the city was referring to.
Okay.
Growth happens as it's.
Well, of course.
Yeah.
Okay.
I did have one on the condition that the city, your comfort, comfortable with that? You don't have any further follow-up comments on that, the way the wording on that?
No, we're with the county's wording of it. We're in alignment with that, and we were under the impression that we would have to, in phases three and following, we would have to produce new traffic studies and as part of the process. So, we just assumed that that was all part of it. I think that the condition is more of a clarification to make sure that those items are addressed, and we're in support of that.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Anything else from the county?
Yes.
Okay.
Sorry, it has a little delay before it actually pops on.
No worry. And for the record, your name.
For the record, my name is Meg Sands, planner with the Department of Community Development. Yes, the staff report is accurate based on the information provided by the applicant, so I just want to make that clear, outlining each phase and what's proposed for each phase. With regard to the city outlining, potential uses, it's kind of speculating to uses. It's really a challenge. Once you start listing a set of uses, then you're eliminating all other uses. And churches, by their nature, kind of change and evolve based on their congregation makeup. So outlining a certain set of uses and limiting to that doesn't seem a very realistic approach. Different churches operate differently, and how we would start developing a list of those uses doesn't seem practical or reasonable.
The one thing was just certainly if you're going to operate a school that...
If there was a school proposal, it would have been outlined in the staff report, right. And it would have been clearly presented.
But you might have a range of meetings addressing a range of...
If there was any kind of school, it would have been outlined, and they would have to specifically request it. And that's one of the questions we ask at a tech review, just to be very clear, because it's not presented. We would want to know that. So we already kind of knew that up front. I'm trying to outline things that aren't proposed. Usually the people aren't happy with my staff report because as long as it is, so it would just, at least double or triple it. So that's why we don't go into everything that can't be either. It's, again, impractical. Again, with the comments with regard to the driveway separation requirement about stacking of vehicle concerns and width access sidewalks, again, we rely on WASDOT to review the project. This gets sent to them, initially, and the only comment that we have back or condition of requirement is an access connection permit. We don't require that the church obtain that prior to getting a conditional use permit because we have no way of knowing whether the hearing examiner is going to approve that request or not. So requiring them to get an access connection permit seems putting the cart before the horse, so to speak. That's why it's a condition of approval. And anything that WASDOT will require, if there's somehow that they can't meet the elements of that access connection permit, then the church will presumably have to abandon their project or modify their project such that it would work somehow. We don't anticipate that.
That's why the condition is worded the way it is in terms of that's the planned access point. The city had mentioned another access point that it sounds like they tend to prefer, but
it's WASDOT's call, and we rely on that.
Because the condition could be revised to be, but it's not like all the planning has been for that to be the access point.
Correct.
So, but you can always revise the condition if as a backup. So if DOT didn't approve, you don't have to come back before me. But it may be easier to do it the way it's given that all the planning has been, and it affects the site design too, and there are a host of issues that come into play.
Right. They would be needing to get the access connection permit as an element of the SDAP. So if that showed some kind of different access requirement from the state, then the engineer would be presenting the SDAP based on that. So we would be evaluating at that time, but it still would be under a WASDOT approval. So I don't see how there would be an issue or needing to change the condition in any way.
What about in terms of involving the city review? There was some language on the new condition that you read into the record. The city raised a comment about being sure that they were involved in that process and had an opportunity to comment at that point. Do you have any thoughts on that?
My inclination is to leave the wording the way it was presented, but certainly the examiner can choose to change that. And MDNS is a DNS. It's as you stated, it's just with conditions. So it's still a DNS. Generally, because we don't know what's going to be presented with the TIA, we're kind of trying to speculate to some extent. But I don't know whether it would require a SEPA addendum, as I think you pointed out, is not appealable, mm-hmm. or whether a new formal SEPA decision would be issued. It's hard to tell without the information to know where that would fall.
That's not something I could, determine anyway.
So based on that, I mean, I have every confidence in our staff in being able to evaluate for SEPA.
Yeah.
And I'm going to leave it at that. Just want to also point out that WASDOT wasn't asking for any specific mitigation of traffic impact. So, again, we're relying on WASDOT to have evaluated that. And we don't see so far that the city's presented any nexus to require anything for their roadways, or that the distance from any of the ones that they've mentioned are applicable. But again, we'll defer to you to evaluate all of that. In the context of the comment about concurrency cannot stipulate conditions, I'm not sure that's quite an accurate statement. I think when we evaluated the project that there was no conditions to place on there other than the conditions that are on the project, which you have in the staff report. Looking at a potential revision for the project, when you look at the full build-out, it's a pretty intensive use of the site. And looking at square footage, although you can evaluate for square footage and traffic versus the number of people, sorry, I'll move this way a little bit for the podium block. It's really for a church, the number of people that are coming that are going to bring the cars, not what the square footage is. So it seems reasonable that the evaluation that's been done, and with the condition to require a second TIA, I think that issue is addressed. At this point, the city hasn't presented any information to show that the project will be materially detrimental, and I think we have to rely on that aspect. It's a speculation, and we can't really deal with speculation. I have full confidence in our ability as staff to, if a major revision were to come in, to see if it triggers that threshold or if it falls within a minor. Again, if you feel that an additional condition is warranted, then we'll live with that, or the applicant will live with that.
I was wondering about some language on just making sure they're notified at that second and involved in the update.
We could certainly add to that any SEPA addendum or decision is transmitted to the city. I'm not sure if that's going to totally satisfy the city, because
what about
their issue is to appeal the SEPA and it's not appealable. Then
my guess is they'd want to be involved in the commenting on the analysis and the updated traffic impact analysis. So that would be the time to, once that was prepared, to send that over. I'll let the city follow up on that, but that's my I would assume that they would want an opportunity to review that second analysis.
Well, again, I have full faith in our county staff of reviewing the TIA, and it's their responsibility to do that. But we can certainly provide the TIA, or you can require that the applicant provide the TIA to the city. Either way, we can transmit.
Okay.
If you had the applicant transmit, we would probably ask for documentation that showed they had done that.
Yeah, I'd probably just do it through the, if there were a condition along those lines, it'd probably just be from the city, county to the city.
Totally fine. You have no problem with that. And then I will defer to our public works staff if they would like to add anything further.
Good morning.
Good morning.
Still, it's morning time.
Jeff.
Go ahead. Your name for the record.
Jeff Shea, County Traffic Engineer.
And you swear to tell the truth today?
I do. I have a document here as a response to your questions.
Okay.
I'd like to put in the record.
Okay.
You want me to read the response or I can just give it to you?
Why don't you give it to the hearing examiner clerk? Do you have a copy for the city? Have they seen it? I don't know if you...
Yes.
Okay, they've got it. Great.
Mm-hmm. I don't know if they've seen it yet. But we have a copy.
Is there a way to get a copy to the city just so they can? We've had a lot of back and forth with comments that come in towards the late, and
sure.
I'm trying to get you all to read each other's materials, and so okay. I get, that way I get better information overall.
Sure.
So.
Okay.
But we'll give. I'm not sure where we are at number wise. I'll let Ms. Walston Short give that a number, and then she will. If you could hand this one up so you can take a quick look at it, given how. And then, was there any comment that you wanted to provide in addition to adding this to the record?
No.
Okay. Thank you. Okay. You can go ahead and sit down if you're. anything further at this point from the county? Okay, no. And then the city, did you want to follow up? And I did have a question if you had a chance to look at this one-page memo. If you can step forward and make sure we capture everything. And again, your name for the record.
Nick Bonds, City of Port Orchard.
And you remain sworn in.
Thank you. So I have not seen the letter that was just passed off.
Okay. I am going to, we'll take a like 2 minute. Really short recess. It's a one page, so it's not real long, but I just want to make sure everybody's read everything. So in terms of, there was some clarification from the applicant about the scope of uses timing. I don't know if you had already heard those clarifications or not, or if that were helpful to you. And then it sounds like we've got confirmation in terms of the description of the project and the phasing is what it is in the staff report. Let's see. Oh, and then there was some discussion with staff about notification and making sure that when that updated traffic analysis is done, that a copy of that is provided to the city. And I didn't know if you had any follow-up comments on anything that just transpired.
Okay, so I keep all of those in my head. In terms of notification, I think we really do want an opportunity to review the traffic report. It's not just being able to comment on CEPA. I mean, I think it's
right. The issue is traffic, so that I would, yeah.
Yes. Yeah. As far as the scope of the use, I think that what has been provided is very helpful. I just think it needs to be documented in the record for the purposes of evaluating if and when a major revision to the approval occurs.
Okay.
And then concerning the staff report and whether the information there is accurate, I guess one thing, and I apologize because we didn't talk about this in the room mm-hmm. just now, but or we talked about it briefly, but it's not addressed here. Phase 2 in the traffic study and Phase 2 in the staff report do not match up with one another. Phase 2 in the traffic study talks about a 6,000 to 7,000 square foot facility, and Phase 2 in the staff report talks about, I think, a 17 or 18,000.
Two-story, 16,000?
Yeah. And so I guess with regard to the impacts that have been evaluated, I'm not entirely sure that the Phase 2 portion of the project has been fully evaluated, although by relying on a per-seat in the assembly area standard as opposed to a square footage standard, maybe that's if that is in fact an acceptable practice under the ITE manual or as provided by the traffic engineer, that may not be a critical piece, but I think it's important to point out that those two didn't quite match up.
Okay. All right, I think we're getting close to being done, but what I would like to do is just really brief recess so the city has an opportunity to take a look at the short memo. It's not long, so there probably isn't anything else. But I want to make sure I've heard everything, because I am planning to close the record as soon as we end today. And then, so let's go. We'll go offline for about 5 minutes, and then if there's anything else, that'll be everybody's last opportunity. So, thank you.